Welcome back to the Kurdish Research Audio Archive.
Great to be here.
Today, we're taking a focused look specifically at the Yazidi community within the Afrin region of Syria, and crucially, before the year 2010.
That's right. We're drawing on some scholarly work that actually observed this community over, well, two decades. So it gives us a good window into their unique situation there during that specific time.
And our goal today is really to unpack the key aspects of Yazidi life as it was in Afrin then.
Exactly. We want to look at, you know, their population numbers in that area, how their society was organized, the religious practices that were maybe a bit distinctive to Afrin, mm-hmm. and how they interacted with the wider Syrian community, particularly their Kurdish neighbors.
Precisely. And the sources we have give us population figures for Yazidi villages right there in the Kurda. And just so everyone's clear, when we say Kurda today, we are talking about the Afrin area.
Yep, same place in this context.
We also have details on their tribal structures, info on their religious sites, leadership figures within Afrin, and some really interesting insights into their history and sort of how their identity took shape in that very specific place.
Okay.
Okay, let's get into it. Where exactly in Afrin were these Yazidi communities concentrated? And what were their numbers like back then, before 2010?
So geographically, like you said, the focus is the Kurda region, essentially the Afrin area. Mm-hmm. The estimates we have prior to 2011 suggest a population of around 7,000 Yazidis living there.
Okay.
That's spread across roughly 1,000 families. And it's important to note, the vast majority of these people lived in rural settings. Mm-hmm. Their lives were very much tied to the land.
About 7,000 people then in that specific zone. That gives you a sense of their presence locally. And you mentioned rural life. Were they mostly farmers like others around them?
Yes. The sources indicate agriculture was pretty central to their economy, very similar to their Kurdish Muslim neighbors in the Kurda area. Oh. And while, you know, it's worth remembering, there were other Yazidi communities over in the Jazeera region of Syria.
Mm-hmm.
Their social setup and experiences were different in some key ways. But for today, yeah, our focus stays firmly on Afrin before 2010.
Afrin it is. Now, something came up in the material about village names. What was going on there?
Ah, yes. The Syrian government had this policy of Arabizing Kurdish village names. And this affected Yazidi villages in the Kurda, too.
Okay.
It was part of a wider effort, really. And it had implications for the visibility of, you know, Kurdish cultural heritage generally in the region.
So it wasn't just a name change on paper.
No, not at all. It subtly chipped away at the everyday linguistic landscape for Yazidis there. You can imagine how it might maybe disconnect younger generations from the heritage tied up in those original Kurdish names. That kind of symbolic erasure, it can really impact identity over time.
So a village the Yazidi community knew by one name would officially have a different Arabic name. That definitely adds another layer to understanding their experience as a minority within Syria.
Absolutely. It really speaks to the challenges of holding on to a distinct cultural identity within a larger state system.
Mm-hmm.
And what's more, the sources also mention some villages, particularly in the Shiraz region, like Kimar and Sokanik.
Right.
Which historically had large Yazidi populations, but saw significant conversions to Islam well before 2010.
Wow, conversions on that scale must have left a mark. What more can you tell us? Were there, like, traces of their Yazidi past left in those places?
Well, take Sokanek, for instance. The conversions there reportedly happened even before World War I.
Okay.
But what's fascinating is that even after converting, some families apparently kept aspects of their Yazidi heritage. The source even suggests they looked for ways to reconnect with Yazidi clergy later on.
Really?
Yeah, hinting at this kind of lingering ancestral identity. Kimar was a bit different. It was once a big Yazidi village. But by the early 2000s, only a handful of Yazidi families were left. Though, you know, archaeological remains still pointed to its earlier history.
That paints a picture of some pretty major historical shifts in religious identity right there in the region. Okay, so we've got this community, mostly rural in Afrin, dealing with name changes for their villages, and this history of some communities converting. How did they actually organize themselves socially within Afrin?
Well, much like their Kurdish Muslim neighbors in the Kurda, kinship family ties and tribal affiliations were really important for the Yazidis there. These tribal connections were pretty key in shaping their social organization, their community life.
Were there specific Yazidi tribes that were particularly prominent in the Kurda part of Afrin?
Yes. The source points out several important ones. You have the Dinadi, the Reshkin, Dawidia, Sherikin, Kalidi, Chelka, and Kopani.
Okay.
The Dinadi tribe is even noted as having several branches within it. So these tribal structures, They provided a kind of framework for social interaction, mutual support, that sort of thing, within the Afrin Yazidi community.
Right, a system of interconnected families, lineages providing a social backbone. How strong were these tribal ties in Afrin compared to, say, other Yazidi communities in Syria, like in the Jazeera?
That's a good point. The source suggests that while tribal cohesion was definitely there among the Kurda Yazidis, it was generally maybe less pronounced, less of a defining feature compared to the Yazidis over in the Jazeera region.
Interesting.
Perhaps because the Afrin community was more geographically concentrated, maybe other forms of social bonds took hold alongside the tribal ones.
That's a key distinction. It highlights these regional variations even within the Syrian Yazidi community. Okay, let's shift focus now to their religious life, specifically in Afrin, again, before 2010. What were some of the unique things about their practices there?
A really significant feature was the importance of local shrines and sanctuaries within the Kurda.
Okay.
These places were crucial spots for worship, especially during religious holidays. And it was common practice to bury the dead nearby, often around these shrines.
Shrines as centers for worship and burial, they must have held really deep spiritual meaning for Afrin Yazidis. Can you give us some examples of these important sites?
Certainly. The shrine of Sheikh Barakat, for example.
Mm.
Now, its main location is over in Sinjar in Iraq, but it had a local presence in the Kurda. It was a frequent destination when Yazidis celebrated their new year.
Right.
And interestingly, this shrine was also visited by Muslims and Druzes. Each group had their own traditions connected to it, so it suggests a degree of kind of shared sacred space.
Shared sacred spaces. Wow, that speaks volumes about how interconnected communities could be in that region. Were there other important shrines?
Oh, yes. There was a shrine dedicated to Sheikh Ali in the village of Basifan.
Mm.
Then you had the Hanan Shrine near Katme. That one was believed to have healing power, so lots of local people went there seeking cures. It also became a major cemetery for the community.
Okay.
There's also the shrine of Sheikh Abdel al-Qadir Jilani in Turunde. Now, Turunde was a mixed Muslim Yazidi village, and this shrine was revered and visited by both groups.
Another shared one.
Exactly. Mm. And finally, the shrine of Sheikh Rakab in Shadair. That served as a focal point for Yazidis from several nearby villages. So these sites, they were clearly more than just, you know, historical markers. They were living, breathing centers of religious and community life for Afrin Yazidis.
So not just isolated spots, but really woven into the social and religious fabric of the Afrin region. Now, who are the main religious figures leading this community?
Well, the Yazidi community and the Kurda, like others, basically had two main groups.
Mm-hmm.
The lay people, the general members, and then the clergy. The clergy consisted of sheikhs and peers.
Right.
And there were specific customs, rules, governing the relationships between these groups, defining their roles in the community's religious structure.
And within the clergy in Afrin, were there distinct lines of authority or heritage?
Yes. The sheikhs in Afrin traced their lineage back through three main lines of descent.
Mm.
The Shamsani, the Adani, and the Qattani. And the local Yazidi understanding connected these lines back to really significant religious figures from their past. The Shimsani group's ancestor, for example, was believed to have had several very pious descendants who hold important places in Yazidi tradition.
Ah, I see.
The fact that Afrin sheikhs trace their lineage like this is crucial.
Yeah.
You know, in many traditional societies, especially religious ones, these hereditary lines give significant authority and legitimacy. So understanding these lines, Shimsani, Adani, Qattani, helps us grasp the established hierarchy, the sources of religious power within the Afrin Yazidi community back then.
So a hereditary religious leadership structure is kind of specific to Afrin.
Mm.
Were there particular individuals who held prominent positions before 2010?
The source does mention several religious leaders who were active in the Kurda during that time. Names like Sheikh Mend, Sheikh Badin, Sheikh Akub, and Sheikh Muhammad Khalil Kahlo Kamo. These individuals would have been key figures, providing spiritual guidance, upholding traditions. And it's worth noting, this contrasts a bit with the Jazeera region, where the religious leadership apparently faced more challenges maintaining cohesion, partly because the Yazidi population there was more scattered.
That makes sense. A more concentrated community in Afrin probably helped foster a more grounded, accessible religious leadership. Now, the source material mentioned a tradition specific to the Kurda called Taj Hilla. That sounds really unique to this area. Can you tell us about that?
The Taj Hilla tradition, yes, it is indeed a distinctive practice you find in the Kurda. It's described as having similarities to the Sinjak processions known elsewhere among Yazidis, but it has its own local flavor.
How so?
Well, it happens on the first day of the Muslim Feast of Sacrifice, Eid al-Adha, and it's specifically called Taj Hilla in the Afan context.
Interesting that it lines up with a major Muslim holiday.
It is interesting, isn't it? It suggests maybe a fascinating history of cultural interaction, maybe adaptation within Afrin. Perhaps it served not just a religious purpose, but a social one too, allowing Yazidis to observe their traditions within the broader rhythm of the region.
Tied to Eid al-Adha, but a distinct Yazidi observance. What exactly does the Taj Hilla tradition involve?
The core elements are 7 pieces of woolen cloth. They're dark brown, considered sacred. They represent the 7 angels in Yazidi belief.
Okay.
These pieces are called Taj Hilla. They're kept in special containers, and specific families are entrusted with looking after them. They're believed to possess baraka, you know, a kind of divine blessing or sacred power.
7 pieces of cloth representing these key spiritual figures cared for by specific families. What happens during the actual ceremony?
So on the day of Eid al-Adha, the guardian family hosts this communal gathering. Clerics and lay members from the village come together to receive blessings from these relics.
Oh.
The Taj Hilla objects are displayed, maybe on an altar-like platform. People attending will often touch or kiss the sacred fabric, you know, as a sign of reverence.
Mm-hmm.
The ceremony includes sacrificing an animal, followed by a shared meal for everyone there. Afterwards, a sheikh recites prayers and specific religious hymns. These are called qiyils.
Qiyils, right, the ancient oral hymns.
Exactly. Very central to Yazidi tradition, often about creation myths, things like that. The sheikh picks ones appropriate for the occasion. He also gives a sermon offering religious explanation and guidance.
Okay.
And before leaving, people show respect to the sheikh, maybe kissing his hand or head, seeking his blessing. Then the guardian family puts the Taj Hilla safely away again until the next Eid al-Adha. You can just picture this vibrant scene.
That sounds like a really powerful community ritual deeply rooted in the local Afrin context. Did the source mention specific villages where these Taj Hilla objects were kept?
Yes, it did. In Casteljindo, 2 of these sacred objects were stored with different families. And in Fekiran, they had a more complete set, 6 of the 7 pieces kept by another guardian family.
Okay.
The source also notes that this tradition, while it definitely had older roots, saw something of a revival in 2013, which just underscores how significant it remained for the community, even though our focus today is before 2010.
So, despite everything, these unique religious traditions were alive and well within the Afrin Yazidi community before 2010. Okay, let's talk about how the Yazidis in Afrin saw themselves, their identity, in that specific regional context.
Well, the source suggests that, generally speaking, Yazidis in Afrin were in a somewhat better economic position compared to those in the Jazeera region.
Mm.
They also seem to have found a place within the existing social structure in Syria at the time.
A more stable economic footing, some social integration. How did that affect their relationships with their neighbors, especially the Kurdish Muslims?
The relations between Yazidi and Muslim Kurds in the Kurdah are generally described as pretty stable, long-standing, marked by mutual tolerance.
Okay.
And even, sometimes, cooperation on shared issues, particularly socio-political concerns, maybe when dealing with government authorities. There seems to have been a general respect for each other's way of life.
That sounds like a picture of, well, peaceful coexistence, even collaboration sometimes. What about fundamental Yazidi customs, like marriage within the community? Was that strictly followed in Afrin?
Interestingly, no. The source notes some deviation from the strict Yazidi practice of endogamy that's marrying within your own group, specifically your religious caste.
Oh, why was that?
It seems it was partly attributed to the relatively small number of clergy available within the region in Afrin. Practicalities, perhaps.
So the practical reality of a smaller, defined community led to some flexibility in those long-held marriage traditions. The source also calls Yazidis a double minority. What does that mean in the Afrin context?
Yeah, that term highlights that Yazidis are, one, a Kurdish-speaking community, but two, they follow their own distinct religion.
Right.
So that makes them an ethnic minority within Syria and also a religious minority within the broader Kurdish population, who are mostly Sunni Muslim.
So juggling identity on both ethnic and religious fronts, how did this double minority status play out when it came to getting involved in wider political movements in Syria, if they did?
Well, historically, Yazidis in Afrin did take part in the Kurdish national movement. The source mentions that younger Yazidis were often attracted to Kurdish political parties,
mm-hmm.
but it also stresses that their distinct religious identity remained incredibly important, a central part of who they were as a community.
So aligning with Kurdish cultural and political goals, but always maintaining that unique religious identity, was there a strong, independent Yazidi political voice specifically for Afrin before 2010?
The source suggests that a really strong, unified Yazidi political identity just for Afrin hadn't quite emerged during this period. Their interests were often represented, at least partly, through the existing Kurdish political groups, rather than a separate Yazidi party.
Understood. Navigating the political scene through available channels while keeping their religious distinctiveness front and center. Just one more area before we wrap up. Education. What was the situation with education for Afrin Yazidis before 2010?
Historically, there had been some, maybe, nervousness about formal education in the broader Yazidi community, mostly fears about potential pressure to convert Islamization or Christianization in state schools.
Right, makes sense.
But Afrin provides a really notable exception here. The source highlights something quite significant.
Mm.
The first Yazidi school in the Kurdah was actually set up in the village of Kibare, way back in 1926.
1926, wow. Who was behind that?
It was led by a prominent community figure named Darwish Aga Shamo.
A Yazidi-run school in 1926. That's quite something. It really shows the community trying proactively to preserve its identity even then. What drove him, do we know?
Exactly. It was a proactive step.
A school run by the Yazidi community itself, teaching their religion in Kurdish. That's a powerful act of cultural preservation. What was the curriculum like? And how long did it last?
The curriculum covered the basics, you know, reading, some science, also Arabic language. But crucially, it included teaching Yazidi religion in Kurdish.
Mm-hmm.
So it clearly shows this early conscious effort within the Afrin community to protect their religious and linguistic heritage through education. Unfortunately, the school closed down a few years after it started, following the death of Darwish Aga Shamo.
Ah, that's a shame.
It is, but its existence, even for that short time, represents a pioneering step, a clear sign of the Afrin Yazidis' commitment to holding on to their unique identity through education.
So as you can really see, the Yazidi community in the Afrin region before 2010 had this truly unique set of characteristics, shaped by their specific location, their social interactions, and these deeply held religious traditions.
Yeah.
Their strong community bonds, those distinctive religious practices, like the fascinating Taj Hilla tradition. It paints a really compelling picture of a resilient group figuring out their identity in a complex place.
Indeed. And the presence of those specific shrines we talked about and that localized Taj Hilla tradition, they really do underscore the distinctive religious character of the Afrin Yazidis.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, that early push for their own school in Kibare, that demonstrates a real commitment to preserving their culture and religion within their own specific environment.
This exploration into the Afrin Yazidi community before 2010, it offers a really insightful look at a particular time and place. It definitely makes you think about the factors that shaped their unique identity and maybe how those dynamics evolved in the years after 2010.
Absolutely. It opens up more questions.
It does. We'd certainly encourage you, the listener, to delve further into the sources we've touched upon today and continue your own exploration into the rich history and the cultural nuances of the Yazidis in Afrin.